Welcome into another edition of Take It to the Bank. As always, I have my co-host Vasily Lorikos with me, and we've got a ton to talk about. Is it time to panic in Baltimore? What the hell is going on in Cleveland? Are the Steelers on the rise? We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. It's Steelers week. We'll have our official preview episode coming up later in the week. But before we get to any of that, how you doing today?
I'm disappointed by the Ravens' effort in Carolina. Thoroughly disappointing loss. You know, losing on the road to a quality team was always possible, but I expected the Ravens to be at least be competitive, and they really weren't competitive once the Panthers took the lead. This loss, now the Ravens' third of the last four games, and more concerning, the way they lost has made me question whether they are a playoff caliber team.
But right now they're 4-4. And if you would have looked at their schedule at the beginning of the season, I think 4-4 would have been an average point. Would have been a point where most people would say, okay, maybe they're 4-4 at this point. Maybe you can argue 5-3 somewhere at that point. But 4-4 isn't a terrible spot to be. I think it's what makes it look so bad is the perception of how they lost. Like, they lost to the Saints because of a missed field goal or whatever. Obviously, there was more to it than that, but they lost to the Saints in a nail-biter. They go to Carolina, they get absolutely smoked. They lose to the Browns in overtime in a game that their defense was playing lights out and their offense couldn't put up any points. And then in week two, they're in Cincinnati and they get completely steamrolled. So I think it's the way that they lost as opposed to that. But let's start with the offense. What did you kind of see from this offense?
Well, beginning with the quarterbacks, I thought Marty's opening script put Joe Flacco in a rhythm by spreading the ball around with some easy passes. But after that opening touchdown drive, Flacco played some of his worst ball this season. He tossed two completely boneheaded, hideous interceptions, overthrew basically all of his deep passes. And he did have a handful of strikes between the hashes, but Flacco did get a little bit check down happy, as evidenced by his 4.9 average yards per attempt. Now, Lamar, on the other hand, had a strong game, as Morningwig made great use of his package plays, I thought. 17-yard run to set up that first touchdown, showed nice accuracy and poise on his touchdown drive in garbage time, which culminated with a pretty pass to Hayden Hurst for Hurst's first score. And that play, believe it or not, that touchdown to Hayden Hurst was the Ravens' only gain longer than 20 yards all day long. What did you make of the quarterback play and Marty's use of them?
The interesting thing, and I think I said this on an earlier episode, is it's really nice to see this evolution of the Lamar Jackson package, because week one, it felt like they just didn't know what to do with Lamar. It just felt like they were trying to put him on the field, but there was really no plan there. And then we kind of see it progress a little bit in week two, week three, so forth and so forth. And then I thought it really took off in the Saints game. I thought in the Saints game they did a really good job of running the outside concepts, things like that. And then obviously in this game I thought there was some success with it as well, with the 17-yard run by Lamar. And then the ball that really pissed me off was that 3rd and 1, because that was a great play call. That's a zone read bluff pass. So pretty much you're faking a zone read. And I think Lamar on that play has an option where he can either run it or he can throw it to Snead, which he elected to do. Obviously the pass was inaccurate. But that's a really good play, and that's a play that you should continue to run, because you saw how everyone reacted to Lamar. Once Lamar kept it, no one respected the wide receivers. Everyone rushed Lamar because they thought he was running it. So I think those plays like RPOs and things like that are going to work well until they show more of Lamar passing the football, not in garbage time. So to me, I think that the Lamar Jackson evolution is going in a positive direction, and they should be here to stay. Flacco, to me, I don't know if I'd be as harsh on him as you were. I thought that he had not a great game, but I think there are some caveats that you have to throw in there. Number one, there was a lot of drop passes, a lot of key drop passes as well. I mean, Willie Snead had one, Hayden Hurst had one on the goal line, Mark Andrews had one, John Brown, I believe, had two, and John Brown had one that was a beautiful pass. Honestly, one of them, he got it tipped out of his hands. It was just Dante Jackson just made a great play, and then the other one, it was right in his hands on a deep ball, but John Brown just couldn't get his feet in bounds, couldn't hold onto the football. So I thought that Flacco, yes, he was horrible. Those two interceptions were arguably some of the worst passes of the season. I don't know what he was doing, especially on the first one when he was rolling out to his right, and I don't know who he was throwing to, but Obviously, those were two bad plays, but I thought it wasn't awful, but it wasn't great. But the point that I would argue is that it has to be better. Like, I think we can agree that he can't play like that again, but I don't think it was that bad because given some of those circumstances. And I hate to be a Flacco apologist.
No, I think that's spot on. That's spot on. Flacco wasn't the reason the Ravens lost the game, but he also showed once again when the going gets tough, he's not necessarily the guy that can rise above it all and carry the team. And when you play contending teams, good teams, sometimes you need your franchise quarterback to be able to do that. And he was unable to do that. But I agree with you on the receivers. It was not a great showing from them. I thought they really had a lot of trouble getting away from man coverage. And when they did, that's when Flacco wasn't accurate on the deep balls. And then John Brown, he ran into a corner who could match his speed in rookie Dante Jackson. I fully expected a lot more production from Crabtree. He showed some reliable hands, but his yards after the catch were rather minimal. Willie Snead, he was the key on that second touchdown drive with two long completions totaling 37 yards. But he picked up two offensive pass interference penalties, had another drop, and seemed a little bit out of sync with Flacco at times. And the rookie tight end, Mark Andrews, was probably the bright spot of the receiving corps. He had an impressive diving catch to move the chains early on, made up for a drop with a nice grab for another conversion on the very next play. And Andrews is looking the part with solid hands and a knack for creating separation.
I certainly agree with that. And I think kind of looking at like the big picture of all of this, because I don't think that it's fair to blame one player, one position group, et cetera, because really they all struggled and they all flashed at times. Like Flacco made some pretty good throws at times, but then he obviously, we talked about the interceptions. I thought Alex Collins had better vision in this game. Obviously, he had the fumble, not great, but his touchdown run was impressive, but he had better vision. The offensive line, I thought for the most part, the pass protection was pretty solid. There was a couple of plays where they gave up a sack or two, and it just wasn't great, but I thought for the most part it was solid. And the wide receivers, like you said, like if you want to blame one position group, that's the position group you should blame the most, because against man coverage, it just wasn't working. I don't know. And the thing is, and what I liked about it, and kind of looking at the big picture, is that Marty, towards the end of the game, it was like too little, too late, where towards the end of the game, they were running pick concepts. The pick concepts worked well. You know Snead's two big plays in this game? I think one was 19 yards and one was 20 or something. Those were both off of pick concepts. Both those were, I think it was Mark Andrews both times, where he just ran into Willie Snead's guy because they were pressing him, and Willie Snead got wide open right there for a nice gain of yards. So that, to me, that's your problem, is that it was too little too late. And the real thing is that the game got out of hand way too early, because the offensive game plan, I didn't have too much of an issue with it. Like, they were doing some good things. They were kind of having some success moving the ball. It was just on the money downs when it mattered most, they just couldn't execute. That was your problem. You had five, they had five drives in the first half. The first one was a touchdown, though obviously I think the best drive of the game. I don't think there's much of a dispute there. The second drive was a three and out. The third drive was a two-play fumble. The fourth drive was a six-play punt, and then the fifth drive was the 10-play that ended in an interception. So to me, the Carolina's offense was thriving and they were putting up points, the Ravens' offense couldn't match it. They were unable to put points on the board, and that's why they lost the game, because they couldn't stay with it.
I thought this was Alex Collins' best game of the season. He did have that fumble, but I think that was on the offensive line. They had two guys pulling to the left side and allowed our defensive tackle to nail him right when he got the handoff. Collins had 4.5 yards per carry. He broke a ton of tackles, especially on that 15-yard TD run. And Buck Allen also did his part with the receiving touchdown. I didn't think the running backs were the problem on Sunday. And I agree. I think the offensive line, considering all their injuries, especially that mid-game injury to Ronnie Stanley, I thought they had a decent game. Orlando Brown Jr. improved on his debut. He had some nice seal blocks and kick out blocks to open up some holes, and he stonewalled Julius Peppers for the vast majority of the afternoon. And Skura did allow that Luke Kuechly sack on a fourth down, and the offensive line did have some trouble passing off some stunts, which allowed some pressure. But the other sack was on the tight ends. Either Hayden Hurst or Nick Boyle should have picked up that blitzing corner. So on the offensive side of the ball, you saw some good, you saw some bad. It's good to see the running game get going a little bit. You need more from the passing game for sure. But this loss does, I think, fall directly on the defense.
you're talking about the Collins fumble. So I was watching it with Michael Crawford. We watch film together sometimes. We were talking about this play because we had kind of argued about it at first. So what it is, it's like a pin pool concept. So pretty much what a pin pool concept is, but my understanding is that it's a variation of the outside zone. And very simply put, there is no really set blocker.
And what I mean by that is if you have a guy on your backside, then you pin. If you have a guy on the play side, then you pull.
So pretty much what that's saying is that they pulled. Grasso and Skura pulled, right? Grasso and Skura pulled. So because they pulled, they actually let number 93 go right through the hole. And the thing is I believe, and Crawford agrees with me, that it's Grasso's fault because he should have blocked him. He should have saw that was going on. And you could see Yanda actually, he stutter stepped and realized and was like, whoa, what's going on? And he didn't know how to react and he couldn't get there in time. So really, to me, that's just a miscommunication for a guy that's a third string left guard that shouldn't even be on the field. You know what I mean? So to me, that was a problem. The other thing I want to mention that you talked about, that that's a great point. Orlando Brown Jr. did play well, and he actually picked up. There was a couple times where they ran stunts to his side, and having Marshall Yanda next to you, and this is why I really think that Orlando Brown Jr. will be fine at right tackle, because Marshall Yanda pretty much took over those stunts, because what he does, and most guards probably don't do this, is he doesn't really engage, because he'll identify the stunt, usually it's a TE stunt, and we'll go to the inside. What he'll do is he won't even engage with the tackle. He'll just push him off and just let Brown know, hey, you got to get this guy because the end's coming around to me. And it worked a couple of times. And that's the thing why I think you should put Hurst at left guard when he comes back from injury, because Brown's going to be fine out there as long as Yanda's right next to him, because Yanda's a playmaker and Yanda's a leader. It's weird to call a playmaker on the offensive line, but he is. He's a guy, he's so smart, he's so football savvy, and he's going to help everyone around him. And he helps every single time. You can see how many times he'll get off of his guy and help someone else block. I mean, Yanda is just an absolute animal in there, and I think you can get away with that.
For sure, and hopefully James Hurst will be able to come back soon and fill that left guard role, and then hopefully really only have one weakness at center with Skura, which you can scheme around a bit. A big key, though, is Ronnie Stanley. Is he going to be able to play? He hurt his knee. He went out for a series or two, came back in, and then went back out again. Jermaine Illuminor took his spot there. We'll see if he's able to suit up for a huge game against Pittsburgh coming up this week. But let's flip it over now to the defense, the main culprits in this loss. North Turner, the offensive coordinator, he was just a step ahead of Wink Martindale all game long. Wink set a variety of blitzes, but the Panthers picked up most of them. Newton was also able to get the ball out quick because the Ravens truly don't have any linebackers or safeties who can cover the middle of the field. And that is not on the defensive coordinator. That's not his fault. That's the front office's fault. Nonetheless, it was a major defensive letdown. The tackling was atrocious at times. And some of the play calls as well were downright poor.
So here's the thing. Going into this game, in our preview episode, we talked about how Cam Newton can just destroy a defense. We talked about how if you let Cam Newton have his way, if you let Cam Newton do exactly what he wants to do, you're going to be destroyed all game. We also talked about how Cam Newton was a, contrary to popular belief, he's actually a stationary thrower. So you saw it. When he went to the outside, how many times did he throw outside the pocket? I can count on one hand how many times he did that, and it wasn't many. So to me, they just had a poor game plan against him. I'm not sure what Wink installed or what kind of game plan they have, but it just seems to make no sense of what they did. And the other thing is when Cam Newton scored that touchdown, how the hell are you not having a guy on the outside covering him and containing him? How the hell do you all get sucked up when you know? I was screaming before the play, watch the outside. You know he's going to the outside. He might keep it. Someone's got to contain it. No one did it. To me, that's the issue. Is it just looked like they were unprepared, they were outcoached, and it looked like they didn't watch any film on the Panthers to know who they were. I mean, Greg Olsen destroyed them. Tony Jefferson proved to me yet again that he can't cover tight ends. Eric Weddle, and on that touchdown, Greg Olsen's touchdown, I was looking at the All-22 on that. So really, Tony Jefferson, what I saw is obviously he got burned because he's just not very adept at guarding tight ends. There is a little bit of a height advantage for Olsen against Jefferson. Jefferson's only 5'11", Olsen's like 6'5". But What happened was Jefferson just overplayed him, got beat, and Weddle was too flat in his step, and he just overcommitted, and he just got beat. So to me, that play is the microcosm of the Ravens' problem, is they have two safeties that are just awful in coverage.
For sure, and that's, I mean, I don't know what Martindale can do. He doesn't have, all the players that play in the middle of the field are slow, and C.J. Mosley was flat out embarrassed in this game. He missed way, way, way too many tackles, total liability in coverage, both underneath and in the middle of the zone. And his alarming lack of speed was exposed on that pitch play to DJ Moore that Moore fumbled but was still able to get the edge. And we're both on record that the Ravens should not pay him nearly what he's demanding this offseason. But after this game, I'm starting to wonder if the Ravens should consider benching him for Peanut and Kenny Young.
I don't know about that yet. I think Kenny Young's a little bit too raw for my taste. I mean, Kenny Young's good, but I think you stick with Mosley for right now. I just don't know. Like, to me, I don't know how you fix this defense because it's not a – I mean, yeah, the scheme was certainly a problem. But it really isn't a scheme issue. It's a fact that you don't have the players, like you said. It's a fact that you don't have guys that can cover. You don't have safeties that can execute their positions. You don't have linebackers, or you have one linebacker, I should say, in C.J. Mosley, who really isn't adept at covering, especially tight ends, or in a zone. I think he drops way too shallow at times. And you can see it on the film, is that he just drops way too shallow and they just throw it right over him in the hole between him and the safeties. That's a problem. So I don't know if you coach that up. I don't know if it's just like you got to find ways to just scheme around that. I just don't know what you do there because it's a personnel issue. It's not a scheme issue. And yeah, Martindale has shown me that he's solid at second half adjustments, and he's not a terrible head coach. He's not an idiot. But I do think that there's a point in time where you have to realize that this defense isn't nearly as good as many people are saying. And I tweeted this out like 10 times, and I'm going to read it once more in our podcast because I have to, because I think that I get pissed off when people just want to sit here and blame the offense all the time, because I get it. Joe Flacco is an easy target. I fall victim of it, but the defense, this defense is not great or elite. Just listen to this. So against Andy Dalton, Drew Brees, Cam Newton, and Ben Roethlisberger, those four guys, if it combined to throw for 970 yards, 9 touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown, and 1 interception. That's not great. Against Marcus Mariota, Baker Mayfield, Case Keenum, and then Nathan Peterman / Josh Allen, 749 yards, 1 touchdown, and 4 interceptions. So to me, that tells you all you need to know. They can't stop good quarterbacks.
Last season, 2017 as well, how many backup quarterbacks were on their schedule? I think they played at least 6 backup quarterbacks, and they still didn't have dominant defensive numbers at the end of the season, despite the narrative. You know, and they have the same personnel. The safeties, they didn't get any faster in the offseason. Eric Weddle, he had a pick off on the 2-point conversion, tipped another ball in the end zone, but he's not really an impact player anymore. Jefferson can't cover tight ends. The linebackers, you know, they have problems in coverage. That 33-yard pass to DJ Moore in the seam that Newton delivered out of his own end zone was kind of a backbreaker, kind of a microcosm of what the Ravens' problems are. And another problem they had in this game was a lack of pass rush. They were able to flush Cam out of the pocket a few times, and Za'Darius Smith created some pressure up the middle, but they barely touched Newton overall. On a positive note now, Matt Judon had his best game of the season, 10 tackles. He was all over the place, putting McCaffrey on the ground, making tackles downfield, a pass breakup in coverage. And then he almost picked off a swim pass to boot. He had a dominant stretch in this game. I think that's a good sign for the future after his slow start to the season.
I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I think when it comes April, whether the Ravens win the Super Bowl or not, which I don't think they're going to, but no matter what happens, I think when we're talking in April about the Ravens' draft needs, I think safety is going to be pretty darn high on that list. I would argue it's their number one need right now, but it's going to be pretty high because, I mean, who knows what happens with Weddle in the offseason. Jefferson, I think contractually they're obligated to him for one more year, but you're going to have to get a free safety that's rangy and can play in the single high looks, because that's what Wing Martindale likes to do. So you're going to have to get a guy that can do that. And yeah, there's a couple guys in this draft class, a couple safeties. We'll get into that a little bit later. But there's a couple guys they could target. But to me, safety is the biggest need on this defense and probably the biggest need on this team right now.
I agree. I've been saying that for years, and people have disagreed. But You need somebody that can cover the middle of the field. You can send every blitz in the playbook, but if there's guys wide open, easy passes right in the quarterback's vision, and you're not getting any defensive interior pressure or minimal defensive pressure, you're going to get burned when you play good quarterbacks, period. But let's not get too negative. There were some other players that flashed a little bit. Pinot Owosso made some nice stops in run defense, as did Michael Pierce. Tavon Young also played very well. Tight man coverage for the most part and was a very short tackler. Definitely a solid game for the slot corner. Jimmy Smith, however, has seemingly lost a step since that Achilles injury. He did break up one pass, but he doesn't break on the ball as quickly as he used to. And he was totally fooled on that, on Newton's touchdown run that you mentioned earlier. You know, Achilles is a tough injury for a 30-year-old cornerback to come back from. I think this may be Jimmy's final season in purple. And also, I have to ask, what is going on with Jerry Rosberg's formerly elite special teams unit? A procedure penalty stopped what would have been a fake punt first down. The punt coverage team missed several tackles, and their return game is no longer threatening. The Ravens used to be able to count on an advantage in that fifth phase, and they needed to, and it seems that that's disappeared.
I have no idea. I don't have an answer for you, because you hit on the nail on the head. Jerry Rosberg's units are usually well-coached. They're usually well-disciplined. They usually don't make stupid mistakes. They don't usually have a lot of penalties, especially on trick plays like that, where you're going for deep in your own territory, and you get it, and it worked well, because the Panthers weren't expecting it. I wasn't expecting it either. But the issue is that they're not well coached right now. They look like they don't know what they're doing, and I don't know how you fix it. And the thing is, and I agree with you, I don't want to get too negative, because the sky is not falling. It's not over yet. The bottom line is, the Ravens have to win their next two games. They have two key divisional matchups. They have the Steelers, they have a bye week, then they have the Bengals. Both of them are at home. You have to, if you want to make the playoffs, if you want to win the AFC North, you have to win these games. No more excuses. No more crap. You have to win these two games, or else you can just pack it up and go play golf in January, because it's an absolute joke. If you lose your next two games at home to teams that really, I mean, the Steelers are looking good right now. Sure, the Bengals are inconsistent. If you lose both of those games at home, pack it up. See you later, Harbaugh. Go find another job. Go rebuild this thing, and let's stop putting off the inevitable.
Absolutely, and that's my final takeaway for sure. The Ravens were outplayed, outcoached, and most concerningly, outmanned. And if you sit there and look at the rosters, the Panthers have McCaffrey, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Cam Newton. They have more playmakers than the Ravens. The lack of overall team speed on the Ravens really hurts them in some of these matchups. And now they're a mediocre 4-4. They have to win their next two. Absolutely no question about it. Or they to really maintain a realistic shot at the postseason, or Harbaugh and Joe Flacco, that their tenures may be coming to an end in Baltimore. At the end of the day, most of the blame has to fall on the front office. They built this flawed team that can't cover the middle of the field and doesn't have receivers that can consistently gain separation. Bottom line, they don't have enough top-end players who can consistently win their one-on-one man-to-man matchups against genuine contenders. And they can scheme up, hopefully scheme around it, But that may be their downfall.
Let me ask you this. This is a question that's going to piss a lot of people off, but, you know, we keep it honest in this podcast. I want your honest opinion on this. Obviously, you give everything honest. Let's say the Ravens, they lose to Pittsburgh. Let's say the offense struggles. Joe Flacco has another bad game. You get in your bye week. You start Lamar Jackson in probably a must win for your season in week 11 against the Bengals.
No, I think you stick with Flacco through the Cincinnati game. I think if you're going to start Lamar, you wait until the Raiders game. That's a very winnable game. Hopefully build some confidence. But I think this is like a two-week do-or-die must-win scenario. They got to win both of them. And I think Harbaugh and Flacco, all the things they've done a lot of good things for the Ravens over the years. 5 straight trips to the playoffs, Super Bowl, 10 postseason wins, et cetera, et cetera. But they're going to be remembered one way or another by how they perform against the Steelers and the Bengals, and you give them that 2 weeks, and you see how it turns out.
I respectfully disagree. I think that if Joe Flacco has, and this is a if, if Joe Flacco has a horrible game and he doesn't, and he is part of the reason why they lost to the Steelers next week, if he is part of the reason and he has a bad game, let's say he throws a couple interceptions, he halts the offense a lot, I think at that point you go into your bye week, you start Lamar Jackson in a do or die game. Now, caveat, let's say they lose the game, but Joe Flacco plays pretty well. Let's say it's similar to that week 14 game last year where Joe Flacco balled out. They put up, what, 38 points and they still lost. If it's that kind of game, okay. And it's a lot of the defense's fault, okay, that's fine. You give Joe Flacco one more chance. But if he plays bad again, because this will be, in my view, this will be his third bad game. If he plays bad again, I think you start Lamar Jackson. That's not to say that Lamar Jackson is going to fix everything, because this is far, the Ravens have far from only a Joe Flacco problem. There's a lot of problems on this team. There's a lot of issues. But I'm just saying, maybe Lamar Jackson can give you that spark. Maybe Lamar Jackson can do something special. Maybe at the very least, he will, A, improve the running game, and B, he will throw defenses off because they're not going to be nearly as prepared for him as they were for Joe Flacco because there's just not enough tape on him. So to me, I think if Joe Flacco has a bad game against the Steelers, it's time to start Lamar. Now, you beat me up for it all you want, but I think it makes sense because at this point you know what you have with Joe Flacco. I know what he is. I've got data on data on data about Joe Flacco. I can tell you what he's going to do. I can tell you what he thinks. I can tell you how he's going to play. Lamar Jackson, I can't do that. He's a wild card. It might blow up in their faces. That's fine. But you know what's going to happen with Joe. But let's get to the round of the NFL. What in the world is going on with your Jacksonville Jaguars?
They're done. They don't have the offensive firepower to hang, you know. They really don't. Their defense was playing very good football against the Eagles, but That offense just let them down, just like the Ravens, just like other teams. You need to be a good offensive team to win in the NFL in 2018, and the Jaguars don't have that. But on to another team that's having some problems, the Cleveland Browns. Major shakeup. Both head coach Hugh Jackson and offensive coordinator Todd Haley were fired, both of them, after the Steelers handily beat them 33-18. What's going on in Cleveland, Logan?
That's a very, very good question, and I wish I had the answer for you, but I don't. The answer is that I think John Dorsey and Jimmy Haslam, who I think is
one of the most involved owners.
He shouldn't be, because look at his tenure since he bought the team and since he took over. So he really should just stay as far away from Cleveland as he can. But he doesn't. That's fine. He's an owner. It's his team. He can do what he wants. If he wants them to be a laughingstock of the league for his entire existence, that's fine. I mean, if he wants to ruin the team and not let people do their jobs and not let football guys who have been in the business for as long as they have been take care of their jobs and do what they think's right, that's fine. It's his team. He can ruin it if he wants. That's his money. But the fact of the bottom line is that Todd Haley and Hugh Jackson, there was some sort of disconnect. Based on what I've heard, based on the research, based on everything I've read and seen, it seems like there was some sort of discord where Haley felt that he was wronged by Hugh because Hugh told him that he's going to give Haley the offense. It's his offense. He's got the keys to the kingdom, and Hugh just never let it go. The counterpoint to that is it's Hugh Jackson's team. He's the head coach. What he says goes. It's his way or the highway, and he wanted to have part of the offense, and Haley was undermining him and doing everything he can to keep Hugh out of the meetings and out of the rooms and things like that. So obviously you can't have that. Whether you want to side with Haley, you want to side with Jackson, that's fine. Pick your poison. I don't really care. The fact is they're both gone. They're both gone, and that told me that John Dorsey's not messing around. John Dorsey is out there, and John Dorsey's saying, you know what? We're going to fire both of you. We're not taking sides in this. You both acted like children. You both couldn't conduct yourself in a professional manner and get along and do your jobs right, and that's why the team's 2-5-1, so that's why you're gone. They're both gone, and whether Greg Williams can turn this team around or not, that remains to be seen. I think he's got his own issues, but the thing is, and it's interesting to me, is when you fire a coach midseason, I don't love the idea of promoting a defensive coordinator or an offensive coordinator to the head coach when you're not promoting another guy to take over that coordinator role, because now you got Greg Williams doing double the workload. Now he's got to do all the head coaching responsibilities and the defensive coordinator responsibilities. I think that might be a little bit too much for him, but hey, he's been in the league before. He's been a defensive coordinator. He's been a head coach before.
It's just odd to fire both of them. Obviously, there was a power struggle between Jackson and Haley. But to fire both of them on the spot like that is an interesting way to go about it, for sure. And let's say, hypothetically, the Ravens are also in the market for a new head coach. I'm not saying it's a sure thing. Ravens still have a 50% chance of making the postseason, according to most of the analytical projections. But let's just say hypothetically, if you are Lincoln Riley or the hot head coach out there, which job would you rather take, the Browns or the Ravens, coming up, in January or February?
Take a team with a lot of young talent and a young rookie quarterback who's a first overall pick who showed some promise this season, and a team, not to mention the Browns have good cap space still, although all their offensive spending, and they have still a good amount of picks, or take a team with not nearly as many picks, horrible cap situation, weird question marks at the quarterback position, and a defense that's certainly questionable. I mean, I don't think that's really a question to me.
Interesting.
I'm going with Cleveland all day. I mean, you disagree?
I don't disagree, but I don't think it's quite as clear cut, mostly because of the ownership part of the equation. Much rather work for a stand-up guy like Steve Bisciotti than Haslam. But around the AFC North, Cincinnati also won a shootout against Tampa Bay. They're now heading into their bye week, but that defense is not looking too good. Ryan Fitzpatrick replaced Jameis Winston in that game and almost pulled off the comeback.
Yeah, the Bengals to me are like the Ravens 2.0. The Bengals are the most inconsistent team in football, tied with the Ravens, I would say. Is sometimes that defense looks dynamic with that front seven, that stout defensive line, and that offense is hit or miss too, obviously with Andy Dalton, AJ Green, some of the other weapons that they have. So the Bengals are a perfect match for the Ravens because they're pretty much the same teams. They both have questionable offensive lines with inconsistent quarterbacks. The Bengals, I'd give them the edge at the wide receiver position, but I mean, they're pretty much the same teams. I mean, to me, so I can't really get a take. I can't really get a feel for this Bengals team because one week they'll look really good, one week they'll look bad. I just don't know. I think their head coach is a problem as well. I think Marvin Lewis just doesn't know how to win meaningful games, but I think it's going to be a tough test for Baltimore in week 11. How about the Steelers on a 3-game winning streak now? They beat the Falcons, they beat the Bengals, and this week they beat the Browns 33-18. This offense appears to be clicking, and more importantly for Pittsburgh, this defense appears to be on the right track. I mean, they held Atlanta to 17 points a couple weeks ago. They held the Bengals to 21. They hold the Browns to 18. I mean, this is a Steelers defense that we both had a lot of question marks about, but it appears that they're hitting their stride.
They do. They do for sure. It's going to be a test for the Ravens coming up in week 9 here. Apparently, the Steelers are also on the trade market looking to add a cornerback with the deadline approaching this afternoon. We'll see if they're able to pull something off in that regard. Yeah, the offense is clicking. The Ravens, for some reason, who knows why, Joe Flacco plays pretty much all of his best games against the Steelers. So they're going to have to lean on their quarterback. But week 8 mostly went to script, you know. The Chiefs held off the Broncos. The Patriots defeated the scrappy Bills on Monday night. And we also saw a potential preview of the NFC playoff divisional round games. As expected, the Rams won a tight game over the Packers, while the Saints, even with the bad game from Drew Brees, were still too much for the Vikings. Who do you think is going to end up with the number one seed in the NFC?
Probably the Rams. I think the. I mean, the Rams have a tough gauntlet coming up, but I still think. I mean, 8-0. I still think they're going to take the one seed. I believe the Saints are probably going to get the 2 seed, and then I guess right now you'd have to say that the Packers are going to get the one of the wild card spots, and the Vikings are going to end up winning that division, and then that 6th wild card spot's kind of up for grabs. You can kind of pick your poison. I mean, the Falcons are surging at this point, right? I mean, it's safe to say that the Falcons, after that disastrous start, they might actually win that 6th wild card spot. Who knows there? I mean, you can look at the Seahawks. The Seahawks are surging. My boy Russell Wilson's playing great football right now. I mean, the NFC is loaded with a lot of contenders, and you look at the AFC, and it's just really not there.
Yeah, I think Seattle's an interesting case study. They were supposed to be in full-on rebuild mode this year, lost Earl Thomas, and now they're surging. You know, that's what a premier quarterback and a good coaching can do for a team. But I'm not so sure that the Rams are going to hold on. The Saints, they can beat you in so many ways, and those two teams are going to face each other, I believe, this coming week, and that could have some postseason implications for sure.
Well, the interesting thing about the Rams, and it's an interesting point to make, is that defense isn't wowing me like I thought it was going to. Like, that defense, like on paper, could be one of the best defenses in the past 10, 15 years, but on the field, it's really not wowing me the way that I thought it would. I mean, they have there's questions all along it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers had some success against them, and let's face it. I mean, I'm going to be honest. If Ty Montgomery doesn't make a bonehead play and fumble that football on the kickoff return, I think Aaron Rodgers takes him down the field and wins the game.
Yeah, most likely. That was pivotal for sure. I think the Rams are missing Talib, their corner, because that team was really built to shut down comeback attempts with two stud corners on the outside and a bunch of interior pass rushers. When they get him back, that'll probably help them out. But I'm starting to buy into the Saints. I mean, they can just – their defense is coming on, their pass rush is coming on, and their offense – I think they have a better offense than the Rams just because they're so versatile with Breeze and those receivers and that two-headed rushing attack.
Another team that I think is flying under the radar, a team that I didn't pick to win the NFC East, the Washington Redskins. I mean, now they've won three straight now. I mean, they beat the Giants by 7. I mean, the Giants, obviously, we know they're a disaster right now, but they picked up two back-to-back division wins, and this is a defense that's really going under the radar, and I attacked Washington for taking Deron Payne with the 13th overall pick, but Payne's looking pretty good. I mean, that defensive line's looking stout. They're really good against the run. They've got a good secondary. DJ Swearinger's playing some of his best football right now as well, so this is a defense for Washington that's really turning up, and Alex Smith is doing enough to win football games.
I'm still not sold on the Redskins secondary, but you have to admit Adrian Peterson, he's still got some gas left in the tank. He's really brought that team together with what he can do and the yards he can pick up, and allows them to play kind of old school football in this modern NFL and still pull out some wins.
Remember, we will have our preview episode for the Ravens Steelers coming out on Friday. Check out for that. We, as you all notice, we are on a new platform. Just to kind of give you a quick overview of that, we are now partnered with SB Nation, and you can find on this same platform, you can find every single team's official SB Nation podcast. So you can check out ours, you can check out every other team. If you want to check out the Steelers podcast, you want to check out the Bengals, every team in the NFL, they have an official podcast with SB Nation, so check that out. We're on this new platform. We are certainly excited for that, so check us out. And you won't be able to find our stuff on SoundCloud anymore. All of our new stuff will be on this platform.
Yeah, we're excited to be with the SB Nation Network. Let's just touch on college football quickly. Clemson curb stomped FSU. Seminoles just couldn't get anything going offensively, and that talented defense eventually wore down against Trevor Lawrence and all his receivers. Georgia outclassed Florida in their annual rivalry game. Jake Fromm with a huge bounce back performance. Elsewhere, Penn State defeated Iowa. Kentucky stacked up another win against Mizzou. Okie State took down Texas. Surging Wazoo came back to earn a W over Stanford, and Mississippi State's tough defense held A&M to just 3 second-half points en route to their victory. It appears that Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame are near locks for the playoff with a handful of teams, Oklahoma, Georgia, Ohio State, LSU, and Michigan, fighting for the final berth. Any predictions you want to make there?
I think that when you look at the college football race and you look at what's going on with it, I think that there's a lot of teams, and this is the argument that we've had several times together, is that it should be 8. I think 8 teams is the perfect number, because if you look at the way it breaks down now, the top 8 really, I think, all deserve to be in. But if you make me guess right now, I think Alabama obviously gets in, because I don't think they're going to lose a single – I don't think they're going to lose a single game all year, including the national championship game, et cetera. Clemson's probably going to get in because the ACC is meh, to say the least. I don't think Notre Dame actually gets in. I think Notre Dame's a little bit overrated, and I think they're going to lose at some point in time. I know their schedule's pretty favorable coming out, but Notre Dame, they're choke artists to me. I think that they're going to fall at some point in time. I think Michigan's going to sneak in there. I think it's going to be Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and then either LSU or Georgia. I don't know. If I had the pick right now, I'd say Georgia, but don't sleep on LSU and Ed Ogeron's team.
Interesting. I have to agree with you on Alabama, prohibitive favorites, and I'll take it a step further. They're not going to lose a game until Tua declares for the NFL.
Until he declares for the NFL?
Yeah.
So you're saying they're going to win every game from here on out, and that they're going to win every game next year too?
They're that good. They have that traditional Alabama awesome defense with that huge offensive line and the stable of running backs, and then you add on top of that the best quarterback in the nation and three awesome sophomore wide receivers, I mean, they're just too good. They're stacked. No one can compete with them. So that's my bold prediction.
Let me ask you this, though. I know that it's really early, but I just have to ask you two final questions before we get out of here. Number one, is Tua going to be the highest graded quarterback since Andrew Luck?
I'm not quite sure because he doesn't have that prototypical size, but he's a really, really special player.
I don't know how you can't, dude. I don't. To me, I'm looking at some of his tape. I'm kind of getting my pre-scouting report on him. I don't know how he's not. I think he's the best quarterback coming out of college since Andrew Luck.
I can't really argue against that.
Dude, how many fourth quarter passes has this guy attempted? This guy is insane. It's insane that he reminds me of Russell Wilson, but honestly, I think he might be better than Russell Wilson in the NFL. And then my second question for you, wide receiver one, DK Metcalf, we don't know what's going on with him. Is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside quietly stepping up to be wide receiver one? Is he just going to shock everyone and be wide receiver one? Because I know they lost, but he had two touchdowns. He's just such a red zone weapon. He's just such a playmaker in that area of the field that you have to think a team like the Ravens could certainly use him. I mean, yeah, he's not a speedster, but he's a crafty route runner, and he can – the 50-50 balls really end up being 80-20 balls for him.
Yeah, he's a good player. I don't expect him to be wide receiver one right now. I think it depends on how he tests because speed and testing numbers do matter at the receiver position. If he's sub 4.5, I think he's got a good shot at it. If not, I could see a couple other guys maybe sneaking in there as wide receiver one. But I certainly like Arcega-Whiteside as a prospect for sure.
Yeah, that's it. That's it for us. Don't forget to check out our fantasy football show. It should be coming out on Wednesday afternoon. Check that out. We got our preview episode for the Ravens Steelers coming up in a little bit on Friday morning. With that, we're out.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form the Shutdown Fullcast. I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears and video games.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.